Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Guys, it is pre-debate week.
Who is this JVL guy?
Oh, my God. I want to make this joke so bad, too.
Who is this JVL guy people keep talking about?
Tim, tell the story.
I didn't get to say it because I'm taking a break from The Bulwark's Reddit page for mental health purposes, but JVL shared in the Slack that apparently somebody on the Reddit left a comment that was like, will somebody tell me who the JVL is that Tim keeps mentioning on the podcast? He's like, JVL wrote this, JVL said that. What is JVL? Is that a person, place, or thing?
Who can say? Honestly, I've been wondering the same thing for forever.
So when I saw this, I immediately thought, wait a minute, hold on. How does this happen that somebody is a big enough Bulwark fan that they like go to Reddit and seek out the Bulwark subreddit and they consume Tim's show at a high
daily.
Enough rate that they write that they really are intrigued, but yet don't know who I am right here. I do write 7,000 words a week. I'm on like four different podcasts every week. Yeah. Anyway,
that was my
God
favorite
you,
comment
sir,
I've
or
ever
ma'am.
Seen.
It's just a good sign, I think, that we're about our expansion. You know,
sometimes here's my question: is why don't you talk about me more often on the podcast? Why do you always reference JVL?
Because I write things.
Misogyny. I don't know. Or maybe they just know who you are, I think, more likely.
Yeah, The Atlantic called and wants another piece, JVL. And I know what I said to them? I said yes. I said yes.
I bet you did. All right, let's get moving. This is our last show before the debate. We will probably do a post-debate show. We actually haven't talked about that internally. I'm just saying it right now, committing us to it. On a scale of 1 to 10... This is funny because we did this in Denver. We did exactly this question. On a scale of 1 to 10, what is your concern level heading into the debate? Now, I think I said 5 when we were in Denver, but I had just taken like 400 milligrams of Xanax. What is your concern level heading into the debate? And I'll just set the table. Mine's at like 15.
Yeah. That's good. I think that's right. I bet mine was at 15 going into the last.
Yeah, we need somebody to go to the videotape on this because I feel like I said 11, but I don't know. That's just what comes.
I believe you did, Tim. I believe you did. You both were like white knuckling it, and I was like, "Hey, it's all gonna work out. Don't worry."
The greatest president ever's got this.
Yeah, he doesn't have his fastball anymore, but he's on his game. Yeah. I mean, he's still
got a strong
playing
change.
The same sport.
But, you know, in a way, I was right because it was so bad that it made him leave the race, and we got a better candidate.
Yeah, that's true.
True.
It did all work out. See, Xanax is always right. Okay.
But the stakes are the same as they were when we answered this question previously. What's different now is, you know, we're grading on sort of a different curve. One is the expectation of her is that she will be much better. You know, people have leaned heavily into the, like, she's a prosecutor, she'll be good at this. And I think that even as much as they're trying to be the underdogs, like the expectation game is that she can prosecute this case against Donald Trump. I also think, though, that debate is going to be the single most important moment for her to demonstrate, like the way that she, right, what is the biggest concern voters have about her? A lot of it is like, can she stand up to dictators, right? Can she, this goes for, I think, some of the women stuff in general that I've played from focus group sound where people are like, I don't know if a woman can be president because you got to be tough. You got to show people that you can stand up to dictators. Well, Donald Trump is a very good stand-in for what it would be like for her to stand up to autocrats around the world. Like everybody's going to be looking for her. Can she project strength against him? Right. And so she's got to do a lot. She's got to demonstrate substance, command of the issues. I saw a headline where it said that her strategy was to rattle Trump. And I'm concerned about that because the fact is
though, I wouldn't take any leak about what they're planning on doing from this team seriously, because that was the thing before Biden. Remember, he was going to those leaks were happening before the Biden debate. He's going to troll him. He's got to get him off his game. So I don't know. You know, you got to take sometimes that stuff with a grain of salt. I'm sorry. Continue.
No, Trump will rattle himself, right? Like she'll rattle him by existing. She'll rattle him more by demonstrating a flawless command of substance and being able to talk about why she thinks the things that she does effectively. Like, that's what will rattle him. Not, not intentional rattling. So anyway, I do think the stakes are really high, and I think her performance is really going to matter, and I'm super nervous about it.
Yeah.
I think that is a very great point that you made about, like, Trump as stand-in for Putin a little bit. That's very insightful and correct. And I do think that the bar for her is high on that. My worry is like an 8.5, maybe a 9. So it's less than it was for Biden. I do think that some of the debate, like the offensive debate stuff, plays into her skill set quite well. Right, the prosecutorial side of it. The image of the debate, like, just if you're like just walking by, you're cooking dinner and it's on the TV in the background, just her standing there next to him, huge, like, total inverse from the image of the debate in the last one. So, like, that's good. So the thing that just has me worried is the, you know, kind of defensive side of it. Like, Trump is... Trump's brain is mush. I hope we can talk a little bit about the Lex Fridman podcast, which I suffered through during Talisa's basketball practice last night, and some of these other things he's been doing lately. Like, there's a lot of ways in which Trump is, like, way off his game right now. But, like, he can do the Oppo book, like, until the day he dies. Like, he's going to be sitting on a deathbed in a hospital somewhere, and somebody that was against him is going to come in, and he's going to be like, that guy said this about me. Or, like, that person is, have the insult that cuts right to that person's bone. Like, he's good at insult comedy, and he's good at just kind of knowing. Like, he doesn't use his brain for any other information, right? Like, the only information that is in there is, like, the opposition research that he gets from his bleats and from Fox and everywhere. So he's gonna be good at that. And I just, in Kamala, and that's the part that just, you know, Kamala cannot be too defensive, cannot, you know, kind of come off with, so the circular talk that she does sometimes in those sort of settings, there's a decent amount of stuff for him to work with, just as far as, like, things she's changed her views on, and, like, very, who the hell knows, every fucking random criminal, you know, in from Alameda County, through today. So, like, that's the part that has me a little nervous. And I think the stakes are high for her, and she has stepped up to the plate so far. But this is nothing against her. It's just, like, it's a terrifying situation to have come into this, be this late in the campaign. She does not have reps. She's not gone through a primary campaign where she's done 13 of these. You know what I mean? Where you're getting your sea legs a little bit. She did one VP debate with Pence 4 years ago. And, like, that's it.
And a couple of the primary debates.
Yeah. 5 years ago, yeah.
And there was, like, 1,000 people on the stage during those primary debates. Yeah. So, like, she didn't get a lot of talk time. And on the Pence debate, there's one thing, there's a little bit of something where there's a lot of, like, yes queen over some of the stuff she does, where it's like, I'm speaking, right? Like, people make t-shirts out of that. That is base fodder. And, like, she doesn't need that right now. I really hope we don't see the, like, excuse me, I'm speaking, Kamala. I hope we see the, like, this guy is barely here, Kamala. Like, let me talk to the American people. Let me talk about substance. Let me show you how in command I am of this. I just don't think the memification of her is what we're looking for out of this debate.
Yeah, I am worried about the excuse me, I'm speaking, not because of Yas Queen, but because I think Trump will simply bulldoze straight over her with that, at which point she'll look weak, right? If you say, excuse me, I'm speaking, well, and the other person doesn't stop.
We've got the mute buttons.
Do we? Are they back?
The mute buttons are back.
I don't know. My concerns are basically threefold. First is the reps that she's coming in basically right off the bench. You know, she's like Robert Ory, right? We brought her in off the bench and we're just throwing her the three ball and saying, hey, we need you to sink this. We're down by two with 15 seconds left. Two is that over the course of my career, I have persistently underestimated the power of racism as a force in American politics. And I worry that I'm doing that again. And three, I think Trump has had a very good week. And
really?
I think that the Arlington Cemetery thing was exactly what he needed. And I think it was very helpful to him. I think he 100% took the narrative back from Harris. The last week was all about Donald Trump again. It wasn't about Kamala Harris and her big crowds. It wasn't a series of viral moments where people are like, you know, and it puts, you know, he sucked her into it where, you know, she said something about, yeah, this is pretty bad. And he was oh, yeah, well, now you're fighting with... Now the guy who fought with Gold Star Families over the 2016 convention, now he's like wrapping himself in Gold Star Families. I just look at it and I think, the momentum has kind of stalled. And we knew it would. We knew there would be a lull in this layover week between the convention and the debate. But I don't know. I feel like he's back where he wants to be. I feel like he has gotten the dynamics of the race to a place where he's comfortable with, where it's about him and he gets to dominate. I mean, just the fact that she went and sat down for that interview, that CNN interview, that was because he and his people were basically out there demanding that she do it. Well, see, when
I don't think so. No, I think it's like you have to do an interview at some point.
Sure, but they're the ones who made that argument, right? Yeah. Like he made it a, you know. She did the interview because his campaign made it a thing that she had to do.
I don't know, man. He's had a good week. I do like contrarian JVL. Not sure like what he's advanced the ball on besides, I guess, people talking about him again, which is what he likes. Yeah. So I guess there's that. I will say this. I think the campaign has been very, very good. And so we're kind of nitpicking on the margin sometimes, but you had this period to speak with the, what is this momentum that you're talking about? Like the momentum is somewhat polls, which you don't control, and somewhat media domination, which you can control, right? She takes over, you have kind of brat Kamala week, you know, you have the speeches that she's blowing the roof off. You get Tim Walz. People are very excited about that. There's all the conversation about Tim Walz then, but pro and minus. Then you have the convention, which is executed very well. I do kind of wish they had something this week. Like, even if it was just like a hit, like drop some new hit on Trump. Like the ads that they've rolled out this week are all, you know, just a little behind the curtain on presidential campaign ads. Usually you're putting out two kinds of ads. There's one kind of ad that people see during Jeopardy and during the local news that you're actually trying to, you know, and on cooking shows, you're actually trying to persuade people with. And then there's another kind of ad that's like for people to talk about that you play a couple times during, you know, maybe one time during a football game or like one time during Sean Hannity show.
They're called show buys,
right?
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen a show buy this week on something, literally it could have been anything, right? Like give me a new Republican endorser, give me a new hit on Trump that she hasn't done yet, like some really nasty ad. I don't know, just something to kind of like help carry the momentum through, something for people to share on social media. I do feel like it has been, and her campaign schedule this week is pretty light, which, you know, at Labor Day, I guess I would continue this up through Labor Day.
She's doing debate prep, yeah.
Yeah, she's doing debate prep. Up through, I would actually, the media momentum period, I would say consisted up until just Monday, 2 days ago. Like both of them out on Labor Day was good, but I want something else.
The convention bounce was not what people had hoped for. I mean, I had sort of set the line on that at about 3 points. I thought that a 3-point bounce would be good. I think she got to like two and a bit. It worries me a little bit because it was a really well done convention.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a lot that they could have done better.
That's true. Although I will say, I think Tim's point is well taken. Also, look, the Republicans did have a plan post-Democratic convention, which is that they had RFK drop out literally the next day.
Yeah,
like they did grab the news cycle in a way that was smart. And then we all had to sit around for a couple days to like assess the polls and whether or not like how big of a bump was that going to be. I agree with JVL a little bit that Trump had a better week than he's had in the sense that we were talking about Tulsi Gabbard. Like they were rolling out their Dem endorsements in the wake of it. And I don't know, but here's where I sort of disagree is there have been a bunch of big polls this week, and she's doing well. I mean, they are pulling away in Wisconsin outside the margin, which is good. Also in Michigan, which is good. Obviously, I continue to have a great deal of agita over Pennsylvania. Yeah. We started our campaign. We started our big, you know, our first $11.5 million push with Republican voters against Trump. And like, we're spending a disproportionate amount in Pennsylvania because that's where it's a dead heat. But the other thing she's done that I think is interesting, right, is that North Carolina, which I have long said Dems should quit chasing, you know, she's pulled even there. A lot of the polls have her ahead by a point or two there. She's back in the game in Georgia in a real way. They spent a lot of time campaigning in Georgia. It's been interesting to watch her both expand the map. And also, like, Trump did have like a mini scandal because his team had to pull out of New Hampshire because New Hampshire, for a minute, right, Trump against Biden, they were expanding the map. They're looking at Virginia. They're looking at New Hampshire. This is why he dropped out, is because it was getting really scary about all the places that the race was getting competitive because a bunch of Democrats were just like, I'm bored. I'm out. I'm not interested. I don't want to vote for Biden. She like put that coalition back together in a heartbeat. And I don't think you can kind of we're now in the persuasion part of the campaign, right? Like, she put the coalition back together so fast and with such alacrity that we are now in kind of the persuasion slog of the next 2 months, which is like, what do you do about the 15% of undecideds who basically don't like Trump, but also don't know that much about her and don't really pay that much attention to politics, and they're just kind of starting to tune in. And like, that's just where we are. And so that's why the debate is really important. It's like, can she open up that lead from what is right now about 2.5 points to 3 points nationally, about 2 points in a bunch of those swing states, but like 6 points in Wisconsin, which is great. Yeah. Can she pull away from that with the debate? And the debate's one of those few chances to really, really grab the narrative, which is why it's so important.
I mean, I think what she, in a perfect world, you want to exit from the debate with the average voter looking at her and saying, yeah, that's kind of the future.
Yeah, that's fine.
She can be the president.
Right.
Yeah, she can be the president.
Like, that's future. Right. Yeah. I'm ready for, I'm okay with that. Let's go
and,
do that.
And if we're going for an A+, Trump looks kind of sad and over. And I'm done with it. I'm bored. It doesn't even have to be like, again, it's not necessarily even the Yas Queen thing. Like, oh, she really nut-cutted him. But it's like, it's just that I watch that. She looks vibrant and in command. He looks rambling and tired. And like, okay, it's fine. I can move on from this. I mean, obviously MAGA people aren't going to say that, but like that other group, you know, there's 1-2% of people that are just like, all right, fine. It's enough. Let's get over this.
Which like is sort of the swing voter thing that I'm hearing, right, where there's this like kind of a boredom now with Trump. But since there's like, yeah. And so like what you get though, the boredom can have can be double-edged, where on one hand, they don't see him as such a threat that they can't vote for him if what they really care about is like, if they're slightly red-pilled and heterodox and they can care about the economy, right? That is where Trump can pick those people up because they're like, he's not dangerous. Like he's like, he sucks, but like he's better on these things that matter to me, and Democrats or whatever. If she can be like, no, actually, you know what? She's good. She's good. Yeah. She's fine. That's where you can leverage their boredom into the interest into something new.
This is where tariffs, by the way, is a good potential attack line for her that's going to seem boring, right? Like that won't be in the clips the next day, but that like she really should lean into on the economic stuff. Like you really like talk to the CNBC people. Just be like, you really cannot trust this guy. Like he can do it unilaterally. He's going to put a 10% tariff on everything. You know what I mean? And then he'll defend tariffs. That's a nice little kind of exchange for that group.
All right, Tim. You got an ad for us?
Yeah, I do. Our first sponsor today is OneSkin, which if you saw the podcast I did with Bill Kristol on Monday morning after a weekend at Southern Decadence and having a party for the LSU-USC game, you would have noticed that I forgot to put on my OneSkin. Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin. Did you know your body starts out accumulating senescent cells as early as your 20s? These cells stop producing collagen like they used to and start secreting an inflammatory substance that makes neighboring cells dysfunctional too. Sorry for saying secreting, Sarah. There is an answer for these zombie cells, though, and it comes from our friends at OneSkin. Founded by an all-woman team of scientists, OneSkin is the first and only skin longevity company to target cellular senescence, a key hallmark of aging, with their proprietary OS1 peptide. OS1 is scientifically proven to decrease lines and wrinkles, boost hydration, and help with the thinning skin that often comes with age. Don't just take my word for it. They've got over 4,000 five-star reviews for their full line of face, body, sun, and travel size products. For a limited time, you can try OneSkin for 15% off using code THENEXTLEVEL when you check out at oneskin.co. With OneSkin, your skin can stay healthy and strong and hydrated at every age. And boy, did I need some skin hydration this weekend. And so I'm doing my best now. I've been double dipping on the OneSkin. You know who else has been using OneSkin, Sarah?
Who?
Your colleague on your podcast, George Conway Explains It All, George Conway. And I have to tell you, I think he's glowing.
He looks great, and he does use it. In fact, whenever we do this ad on our show, yeah. He like puts it on. He's like carries it with him. He's like always applying it while we're talking. Yeah.
It's working. I'm telling you, it's working. I mean, he's not my type per se, but I can tell the difference, and I noticed that he's been using it. Anyway, OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code THENEXTLEVEL at OneSkin.co. That's 15% off OneSkin.co with code THENEXTLEVEL. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Jonathan Martin has a big column up in Politico today, which I want to talk to you guys about because I thought it was, I mean, A, because it's something I wrote about yesterday. But
always ahead of the game.
Jonathan
has to do actual reporting, though. You just get to kind of drop your thoughts.
I don't quite understand the piece, though. I mean, the thrust of his piece is that for Republicans, the best thing that could possibly happen for the party is that Kamala Harris wins in a landslide. And that this then drives Trump out of the party. And I read it and I was like, okay, well, first of all, she's not going to win a landslide, probably. And, you know, if she wins, it'll be very close. And secondly, think she could win by more than 5 points?
Probably not more
nationally,
than 5.
I don't
nationally.
Know, but if she expands on Biden's lead, that would be real. That would be meaningful.
I mean, I don't think, sure. I guess it's possible she could like win all the Biden states plus flip North Carolina. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's possible.
And do so by a larger margin because they were narrow margins that Biden won.
I mean, that's, I guess, theoretically possible. I think it's not the most likely outcome. The most likely outcome is another very, very close fought Harris victory, but she could lose. And also, if she does win, I just don't see any indication in any way, shape, or form that Trump would go away. Nobody has made this case. I mean, and also, I guess there are all these people talking to J-Mart on background who are like, oh, yeah, you know. And if there was this funny exchange where J-Mart is talking. He's like, everybody is blind sourced. There are like a couple of people on the record in the show, but on the piece. But one of them is like, you know, we can't tell which would be better for us. Would it be better for him to lose and then be forced to go away, or better for us for him to win and then he has to go away because it's such a bizarre, this whole party is like a battered wife, you know, like, well, you know, things are so good when we're together. I don't know. What did you guys think of this, Tim?
I think that there is a rational element to the piece and a totally irrational one. All right. And so I want to look at both. I think that there is a more narrow rational case that's like, if you are, I don't know, John Thune, or you are Mike Johnson's strategist, and you're like, my narrow interest is, how can we have Republican majorities and maybe some durable Republican majorities, particularly in the Senate? And you're like, you know, if we get into 2026 and Kamala's in there and we're in year 6 of these guys and the economy's starting to get worse and Trump is a little bit out of the pic, you know, a little bit out of the picture. And he's still in the picture, he's still bleeding, but like enough out of the picture that maybe we can get like Glenn Youngkin to run for Senate in Virginia, maybe steal a Senate seat or somebody else, right? Like we can expand the map maybe even, because it's going to be a bad year for Democrats. And maybe we can get up to like 54 senators, and that makes it like the, where the Democrats don't have a map that can get them senators again until 2032, right? Like then there's this like kind of narrow-minded, pragmatic way of saying it would be nice for him to go so that outcome is possible. But that's a very DC insider thing, you know. It's kind of like turf protection, right? It's like guarding against quote-unquote worst-case scenarios, whatever, Medicare for all or whatever could happen if the Democrats got the Senate.
They would never have to confirm a Democratic-appointed Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, right.
Ever.
They'd have, yeah, conceivably. So I think that is like would be a rational thing to say. The problem is most of these people then move just seamlessly to the irrational, which is fantasizing about a post-Trump world that doesn't exist and can't exist. The man has been nominated 3 fucking times for president, okay? Big portions of the party, you know, don't I always do the age thing all the time, but like literally, if you are 21 doing your first vote for Donald Trump in 2028, I can't even do the math anymore. You're like a middle-aged person with children. it's not just young people that don't know the pre-Trump era. So the party is Trumpified. The down-ticket people are Trumpified. Trump is not going to go to Midland to paint. You know, like he is going to be bleeding. He's going to be on Fox. He's going to be wannabe, like until he, you know, is unable to speak by
they
medical.
They all have to testify that he actually won.
Yes.
That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Because
and then
here's the thing.
Be trials.
You can't say that Trump really did win in 2020, but actually he lost fair and square in 2024.
Exactly. And then
right?
They're
if
also
you're bought in on 2020,
to,
then he has to be cheated in 2024 too.
Yeah. And then they're also going to have to do the Harris regime is out to get him stuff. Like they're all going to have to do that because the trials are going to go back on.
Because he's going to go to jail.
Right. So none of that, who knows? But none of that stuff is going away. And it's over. Like, it's over. The time for the Trump can go away and we can move on from Trump ended January or whatever the date was that the Senate didn't convict him in 2021. And maybe that wouldn't have even worked, but that was their last time that they even had a realistic chance of this imaginary future.
Sarah?
So I agree with that. Although, to me, what was most interesting about this piece, and it's probably because I'm like a little bit obsessed with this at this point, is like all of these Republicans, they want Trump to lose. Condoleezza Rice is basically subtweeting Trump right now with her whole thing about the dangers of isolationism without mentioning Trump's name. And
is isolationism so dangerous that you might have to vote for a Democrat if they're a robust internationalist? I'm just asking questions.
No. And you know what? I don't want to like go back to the whole argument with the Dispatch folks.
Why not?
I just want to say that actually because I went on a long rant last week. And today I just want to say something very short, which is people should say the thing that they believe to be true. They should just say that they should, if they are a politician, if they are a pundit, but people are so afraid of their audiences, their donors, their voters, that, and this is, I'm talking about now, really the people in J-Mart's piece, but J-Mart's piece is this thing. It is this thing where we know it. We know that there are so many Republicans who think that it is better for Donald Trump to lose. They think it's better for the Republican Party. They think it's better for the country. They think it's better for conservatism. They believe that Donald Trump losing, whether it's for the very practical impact that Tim said, or because they think at least J-Mart's piece is very much like, well, then we can start rebuilding, right? And it's not, they don't necessarily say in the J-Mart piece, like they automatically know that what they're going back to. They say like, this is how we build a post-Trump party that's sort of a fusion between you can't be outright anti-Trump, but you can be post-Trump, whatever. There's this sort of tortured thing that people talk about with themselves. But what drives me crazy, and the reason it drives me crazy is because it could make a difference in this moment if every Republican from H.R. McMaster to General Kelly to the guys at the dispatch, to Condoleezza Rice,
to apparently some senators,
to George W. Bush, to these Republican senators. If you believe that it is better for Donald Trump to lose, say that. Just say it. Say he should lose. You don't. This is where you get into this tortured conversation around voting. I don't care how you vote, because I know how you're going to vote. I know you're going to vote for Kamala Harris. You guys are lying if you say you're not, like, whatever. Or fine, if you're gonna write in Edmund Burke, cool. But you want Jack Harris Kemp. To win. You want Harris to win. Just say it. Just say that it would be better for the country for Donald Trump to lose. And this is all David French was saying when his whole point in his article that then elicited this response that sort of kicked off this whole thing. He was saying, I'm voting for Harris. But more what he was saying is Donald Trump losing and Harris winning is better for conservatism because you get to move on. Now, I think that I need to then split the difference, right? Maybe. I read your triad, JBL.
Hey! What would you say your favorite part of that newsletter was?
I would say the part where I disagree with you on this idea. You were being mean to the voters, as is your wont. You were generalizing that they all want violence, and that is, I believe, not true. I think that is true of a small cohort of Republican voters. But what I agreed with. The part that I agreed with is the idea that, like, we're not going back. We're just, there's this idea that there's some reflex that we're going back to. I say this all the time when I'm on panels. I'm like, yeah, I'm the person that you don't recognize up here. But if you remember one thing about the girl that you didn't know on the panel, know that I said this. The Republican Party is never going back to the days of Mitt Romney or Liz Cheney. I'm going to save everybody some time by just not engaging in that kind of fantasy. And the reason is, the entire apparatus has changed. The voters have changed. The media ecosystem has changed. The Republican Party is going to move in the direction of being some combination of J.D. Vance, Tucker Carlson, and Candace Owens, with all that portends. That is where it's headed. And so the idea that you can just go back to the free markets, American leadership in the world, none of that's happening. It could be a much less dangerous version of itself. But that doesn't mean that it's going back to what it was.
I have one more thought. I know that everybody listening to this knows this. I just think it's worth sitting with the imbalance, though, and how crazy the whole thing is. Like, you can't even imagine a story where a Politico reporter, you know, Martin Jonathan, goes to talk to some Democratic senators, and they're like, we really hope Kamala loses because
she's really bad.
Because, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you have on these panels, like, it's always these centrists, like, and the conservative Wall Street Journal guys are like, the far left really owns the party and they really own Kamala Harris and they really own Joe Biden. And they, like, they say that out loud, right? But then in private conversations, you never hear any centrist Democrats being like, I'm pretty scared. The Kamala's administration is going to be run by DSA socialists and campus protesters and Bernie Sanders. Like, you don't, like that, you don't ever hear that. Like, that's not anything that is there is no inverse version of this. Like, sure, there are times when Democratic politicians have, you know, maybe not been fully candid. Biden was one example, or Israel sometimes. But like, even then, like, there were plenty of Democratic politicians that were speaking out against some of the campus protests or the inverse on the Israel issue. So, like, there just is no other. It's like, it's unimaginable to think about the other example of this. And yet we have to live in this world where, like, it's kind of accepted in centrist circles that, like, both parties' extremes are pretty extreme and dangerous, and we can't give in to either party's extreme. When it's like, no, the Republicans are scared shitless of their extreme because they own them and they run the party.
And they're scary and violent.
The Democrats' extremes are like protesting in drum circles outside of the convention and have no meaningful role in the main body of the party.
And they hate the Democratic nominee and don't vote for the Democratic nominee. This is the other crazy thing. The Democratic extremes aren't actually Democrats.
Not any meaningful way. They weren't.
They're
there
not attacking anybody with their Biden signs. They're not like storming anything with their Biden signs. They're protesting the Democrats.
If there's a surefire way to wake up feeling fresh after a night of drinking, it is with ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly and you'll feel your best tomorrow. You know, there is one negative, just unintended consequence of this sponsor, which we appreciate. I love ZBiotics and I appreciate their sponsorship. But when I forget to take ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink, as I did on Sunday, and when I wake up on Labor Day looking awful, I am just inundated with commentary on text message in the little comments below the video here asking me why I didn't take my ZBiotics probiotic alcohol drink. And so that's a fair point, guys. They're the sponsor. I've got them right downstairs. They're in the closet just waiting for me. I should have done it. You know, I kept hearing about pre-alcohol and I wondered what it was actually like. Now that I've tried it, I believe the hype, and with their GMO technology, they will release different products that help address toxic byproducts of modern living in your gut. Go to ZBiotics.com/next level to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use next level at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/next level and use the code next level at checkout for 15% off.
All right. So we had a story breaking about Mark Robinson. Mark Robinson is the Republican nominee to be governor of
North. I thought it was going
to
be the Russia story.
Is this a breaking story?
When you said it was breaking, I thought you were going to drop the Russia story on me because it wasn't in our rundown, but it, you know, it is actually breaking.
I don't know. What is it? I see. I don't have my Twitter. I listen to my colleagues when they talk. I don't go onto my phone and look Twitter.
I'm listening.
I am also listening. I saw this before we got on. Thank you very much, JVL. Joe Biden is cracking down. There's some sanctions on the Ruskies because they're trying to interfere in our elections again. So the Biden administration announced a crackdown. We don't know the details yet.
Matt Taibbi, hardest hit. Okay, so we have a long reported piece in which it is alleged by multiple on-the-record sources.
Six.
That in his 20s and 30s, as a married father of two, Mark Robinson was a patron of adult stores in the Greensboro area. It's kind of fascinating because it's also a look into, like, pre-internet pornography and the way it... I'm sorry. We just got to take Sarah.
What was
put
the Kevin Smith
on.
Movie? What was the Kevin Smith?
Clerks.
Clerks.
Sarah, put your earmuffs on. In North Carolina at the time, there were certain kinds of porn that you couldn't rent porn because everything was tapes, right? So you couldn't rent them to bring them home. Hmm. You could only buy them. And so what you had was you had stores in which you could buy the tapes, but for a very, very high price. What people remember in the pre-DVD era is known as the sell-through price, where it was like $50 or $100. But what you could do is you could preview a tape in a back room by yourself for only $8. And also, if you were friendly with the pornographer clerk, they would make you a bootleg tape and sell that to you for like pennies on the dollar. Anyway, Mark Robinson's a good customer. The clerks who dealt with him all have fond memories of him, liked him a lot. I find that interesting, especially because one of the things he complains about is that teachers in the public schools are doing nothing but pushing communism and pornography.
And homosexuals are filth.
Well, there's that too.
Maggots and flies for their sexual behavior. I think you missed the key part of the story.
Go ahead.
The key fact.
Go ahead.
He was attending these windowless video porn stores and going in the back room 5 days a week. 5 days a week as a married man. What did the missus think he was doing every day after work? Every single day, he was in there. He was up in there yanking his chain. I mean, 5 days a week, that is commitment. That is a full-time hobby.
A hobby. You know, a lot of people, like in the old days, you'd finish your shift at the plant, you'd stop by the neighborhood bar and knock back a couple on the way home just to let the edge off. I'm sure this is kind of like that. I don't know.
There's all this discussion about the lack of a third place in society now for men.
Why couldn't the porn and news store, this is the other thing, the names of these stores. One of them is like the video and news shop. What news? What news was the porn shop
news
selling?
Of the world.
You can get the Financial Times or Backdoor Hussy 7. I don't know.
Every time I hear a story like this, it reminds me of that Christopher Hitchens quote where he says, whenever I hear some big mouth in Washington or the Christian heartland banging on about the evils of sodomy or whatever, I mentally enter his name into my notebook and contentedly set my watch. Sooner rather than later, he will be discovered, down on his weary and well-worn old knees in some dreary motel or latrine with an expired Visa card, having tried to pay well over the odds to be peed upon by some Apache transvestite. It's okay. Always the ones who protest so
always
much.
The ones you most expect. But here's...
Sarah saying Apache transvestite on my...
I love it. Here's the thing, though, and I confess, the stuff in this, because it's a very long story, very thoroughly reported story, that shocked me most wasn't about the porn. It was about how much of a train wreck this guy's life was. So when he was in high school, he was in the Junior Reserve Officers Training Corps, and he thought, like, he was obsessed with the Rambo movies and thought he was going to become a combat soldier. And then he enlisted in the Army and dropped out before his enlistment even began. When he was 20 or 21, paid for his girlfriend at the time's abortion. A year later, she was pregnant again. Between 1998 and 2003, his family filed for bankruptcy three times. During that period, I'm just reading from the story, Robinson also failed to file income taxes, and two of the family's cars were repossessed. Robinson wrote in his memoir that he was, quote, guilty of bad money management. When I had money and should have been putting it in the bank or spending it on essential things, I was throwing money away. In 2000, Robinson quit college to join his wife's daycare business. In the next few years, the Robinsons lost their house to foreclosure and sold their struggling business. Look, God bless him for getting his life together. Like, this is, I'm not trying to shame him.
Has he got his life together? I mean, like, really? Is this more of a story about... about why the Republican Party is not going back and how degraded the party is and the quality of people that you can bring to the table. It is fucking absurd that this guy is the gubernatorial nominee. A healthy party would never nominate a person like this. Everybody should get a second chance in life, but this is a ridiculous person. He's grotesque. He's a fucking moron. You know, he's treated his family horribly. He has no, like, moral center. He has no accomplishments. He spent most of his 30s in a dark room whacking it off to gross shit. Like, that's who this person is. Why is he the nominee? Because he went viral on the internet.
Yes.
He did a rant about, oh, you're not going to take my guns. And the Republicans are like, oh my God, wait a minute. There's a black man that agrees with us on guns, and he also likes Donald Trump. Check, check.
Governor. Make him the governor.
Make him the governor.
North Carolina.
A black man likes guns and Donald Trump. We're going to make him the governor. We don't need to do any vetting. We don't care what his positions are, any of the issues. We don't care if he's a good person, a moral person, as long as he pretends to be a Christian and pretends to like Donald Trump, and he's black, and we can use him, then we're going to try to make him the governor.
It reminds me of Herschel Walker. They did the same thing. Oh, he's a football player and a black Republican who likes Donald Trump. Did he abuse physically many of his past wives? Did he try to choke them? Did he play Russian roulette with a gun to his head in front of people? Oh, whoops. Not even whoops. It's like, well, Dems are worse or something.
There are plenty of can I just say, there are plenty of people in North Carolina of all the places. Like, this is not... people, all our Alabama listeners get mad every time I mention Alabama as the negative state, but this is not Alabama. All right. They came up with Katie Britt. So even Alabama came up with somebody that's at least basically fine. Like, North Carolina has Charlotte. Like, there are plenty of dudes or women who are just business owners who, like, were upstanding individuals and paid their taxes and were family people and like tax cuts and go to church and like just your old fashioned Republican.
You don't even have to do all those things. Just be normal. Yeah. Like, I'm not even, you don't have to, like.
These are people like fruit on trees in North Carolina. This is my point, though. It's not like this is a recruiting challenge. It's not like Democrats have to come to Louisiana and find somebody that, like, can appeal to the state. Like, it's not like, there are just generic Republican dude grows on fucking trees in North Carolina.
And you know what? Black Republicans. Black normal Republicans, dude. Like, North Carolina has a very high black population, which means they have a higher number of black Republicans, even though it's a small proportion. Yeah. And so, like, there are a million better people.
But you ended up with them because it's a cult. Because you're a cult.
But let's talk about it's Carrie
Lake.
It's
the primary system.
It's Doug Mastriano. Yeah. I mean, they have been getting the weirdest and worst of the weird. Yeah, that's right. The Republican voters are choosing in state after state.
J.D. Vance had to be dragged across the finish line in Ohio by Peter Thiel's $15 million. And he almost lost to Josh Mandel, who is even crazier and weirder. Yeah. Because that's what Republican primary voters want.
And in all these races, by the way, you go look at that governor's race. I forget the guy's name. There's a guy that's exactly what you think his name is. You know, Hank Jones. And he was like, whatever. He's like a farmer or a man the Chamber of Commerce had. And he
owns a couple car dealerships.
Yeah. And he had normal Republican views and he got 12%. And that person ran in Ohio. His name was Matt Dolan. Like these people are run, like, but the Republicans don't want them. And this ties to the segment two part, which is like, great, have Trump go away. But who do you think? It's not like the next time they're going to start voting for reasonable moderates who are accomplished and military veterans and whatever, they're going to fucking pick more jabronis like this guy.
Which is why, if you want real conservatism, if you're a true con, TM, you want these people to lose. You need people to, and so you should say it. Just say, help it along. Help nurture. Be the change you want to see in the world, guys, by telling the truth about why these candidates are bad, why Donald Trump is bad, why they deserve to lose. They don't just deserve to lose. They deserve your scorn. They reflect nothing of the values that you say you want to see in these candidates. Say it. I'm not saying you got to say Kamala Harris is the next coming of Ronald Reagan. You don't have to be JBL.
Oh, I say, I feel like people are saying that all over the place. I feel like every time I open up Twitter, there's some conservative saying that Kamala Harris is going to be JFK and Ronald Reagan rolled into one.
Just do the barest threat assessment and
or
say
not,
out loud.
Or not. Just let the party keep nominating porn store cum jockeys and like former TV hosts that don't know what they're doing and like ex-football players that beat up their wives and like D-list reality show hosts. That's fine. Just let it keep happening.
Like the number of people who now in these orbit who have, like the guy who intro'd Trump, the guy who's the MMA owner,
Dana
What's
White,
his name?
Nominate him next time.
Yeah, no, well, he had just been caught on camera slapping his wife. Well, let's throw him up at the convention. Totally cool. This is the thing. Okay, I asked Benji Sarlin this on the. I did Barry Weiss's pod, and then when I listened to the Dispatch, I'm sorry, JB,
has the Barry Weiss pod aired yet?
I don't think so. But I'm on with David French. And I got to say, it's an excellent conversation. We are allowed to just cook. We are able to say our things. And frankly, she offers up a bunch of the critiques that I'm desperate to respond to because I think that they are specious.
It's a great show because Barry Weiss is specious.
No, I don't think, I don't, that's not what I'm saying.
Oh, no,
I'm not
that's
saying,
what I'm saying.
I actually think, don't. Well, I thought she was gracious and interested. But I thought it was a good conversation. But here's the thing. She said something and I heard Megan McArdle say it on the Dispatch pod too. Megan McArdle, who I think is great. They both said something that I think is so interesting. JVL, here's another piece that I should write and haven't. They both mentioned being bored by Trump. Barry says something that I think is really interesting. She says, but I've picked over everything about Trump. When we have an editorial meeting with our team, like everything about Trump's been covered. And Megan McArdle says the same thing. She says the reason that I'm interested more in what Kamala says is because we've been there, done that with Trump. And I think this is real. No, this is interesting and real to me. What are they saying? They're saying, I cannot sustain my outrage. Yeah. I just can't, right? And I could see this, right? If you are somebody, I think, who like, let's do the most positive sheet on this. Like somebody who's really intellectually curious and they're like, my God, I can't write another column about how unfit Donald Trump is, right? There's like, at least now I can talk about, you know, marginal tax gains and unrealized, you know, taxation, you know, whatever. That's more interesting to me. There's a part of that I can sort of see, but it underscores to me how perverted that our discourse has become by the fact that Donald Trump is so out of bounds, is so consistently demonstrates his lack of fitness, that it is what I say at the end of every Bulwark show. The authoritarian playbook sets out to exhaust you, to force your critical thinking into a place where you're like, I just can't take anymore. The volume of it is so much that it becomes white noise. And my critical thinking, my threat assessment, I'm forced into this idea that like, oh no, I need to give both sides to be, no. No, that's how authoritarians win. And the way that we win is to sustain our outrage, to say every day, no, this is not okay. This isn't right. And there is no equivalency. And if you can't say that, like something you've been broken down by the sheer volume of Trump's insanity.
Yeah. So we're going to sleepwalk into authoritarianism because some people that are wealthy in California are bored. All right. I guess. I guess we're just going to try it all.
We're just going to roll the dice with Trump
because I'm bored. I just want to feel something. I do have to reject the premise of this. I agree with you that some people are bored with Trump, Sarah, and that some people are sleepwalking. I struggle, though. When somebody that runs a news outlet says that and says that, like, we have a meeting and people are like, we can't think about what to write about with Trump because we've said it all. I mean, like the Project 2025 document is like 900 pages. There's
so
like all kinds
this.
Of random Don't... weird shit and like weird policies, yeah. And like, who the hell you could pick through that. You could write an article. You could write a blog post today on it.
Isn't it interesting to like see if George Floyd was really killed?
No. But don't misunderstand me. I could totally agree
with
what you said.
That's a free press thing, by the way.
I know you agree.
It's insane to think that there is not more fodder every day that one could really dig into about the insanity of not just Donald Trump, but the Republican Party and where it's going.
And the people
like,
around him.
You have to decide. Like, you have to decide not to look. Yeah. You have to decide. And I actually think boredom. I see this actually. This is a real anti move is when people are like, yeah, I just like can't get myself all ginned up over this. And it's meant to seem sort of above it all, above the fray.
Oh, I used
but
to
it
hear
is,
that from I remember a guy. I won't say his name because he didn't want to get off on it. But he used to say, you know, these people who on the right, these never Trumpers, they obsess about Trump. They are so into him. They're the same as his followers. They're just there's
right.
the mirror image of the MAGAs. I'm above
that's right.
it. All right. Do you guys want to talk about Tucker's historian?
Yes.
Or MAGA house signs? Pick one.
Well, let's talk about MAGA house signs. I really want to talk about Kamala's accent. Kamala's accent hit. So I just want to tell people that are not YouTube viewers, I did a solo YouTube on this because as a gay who has a gay voice and a real voice, depending on who I'm around, and as a Southerner and as a person who came here to the South, who sometimes talks Southern, I have deep thoughts on the...
You have a gay voice? What does that even mean?
My voice gets gayer in certain environments and straighter in other environments.
I can you hear how he's sort of nasally? That can really amp up to 10.
Yeah.
He can really get up in his...
Yeah, Tyler's downstairs. Tyler like will go down, he'll shout up to me. He'll be like, oh, I hear you are really working your straight voice for that interview today. I don't know what it was. So anyway, I'm just just go look. Sebastian, I'll link to the YouTube. That was my final topic I wanted to cover, but I already did a YouTube on it. But I would like to hear you guys tell me about your sign experiences.
Okay, I would just like... I'm from Central Pennsylvania, and when I am in Central Pennsylvania... I talk much more like I am in Central Pennsylvania than I do on this podcast.
What is that like?
It comes out.
Give me two sentences of it.
Ooh, I don't know if I can just like pull it out. Tim, can you do your gay voice on command? Like, it's a little, I mean, I wouldn't say the word crick exactly, but I might kind of, it's just a little more twangy. I get twangier.
Interesting.
You know. I don't red up the living room per se. Like, red, do you know what that means? Living room.
What is that?
Yeah.
What is
it
that?
It means to clean up. Wow. And there's a whole
journey today, isn't it?
Well, there's a Pennsylvania Dutch inflection. I have to like be in it. This is the thing. This is why it's hard to explain. You have to be in it because you got to be feeling it.
It's just happened. You have to be feeling it, and I don't even notice it.
And then you
I
don't
got
notice
called
it,
out
it happens.
This weekend. So that's I felt very sensitive about Kamala getting called out because I got called out this weekend over it at Dutch.
Okay. All right. Well, fair. I will go look at your YouTube thing. All right, Sarah, tell me about your
experience. You were mentioning signs, and I was out in Virginia over the long weekend, more in sort of the past Warrenton, sort of the past Jennifer Wexton's district, sort of deeper in.
Like Shenandoah?
Yeah, closer to the Shenandoahs. And one of the things that struck me was not the amount of Trump signs, because I would say there were more Trump signs than Harris Walls signs, but there were plenty of Harris Walls signs. It was the size of the Trump signs. The signs are like all enormous. And it's like the ones that they're hitting, like the ones people put in front of their houses are preposterously sized. Yes. And at every juncture, these guys need to dominate in that way, right? It's like our sign is bigger than your sign. And I was shocked by how many just normal front yards had these insanely large Trump Vance signs.
That's so sweet for them. Those little sweetie pies, their big old signs. JVL, what'd you see? You also saw a very large sign, I heard, from I'm sure, a very well-endowed man.
So the town next to mine is one of the most richy rich towns in New Jersey. I would say in Jersey is like there's a dozen towns that everybody in the state, no matter where you live, you hear the name of one of those towns, you're like, oh yeah, it's where those people live, right? Mm-hmm. Like the snooty richy rich types. And so there is the main drag in this very very wealthy town in which the houses are off the hook. And these are not like cookie cutter, they threw them up in McMansions done in 2010. These are generational wealth homes, and they've been there for 100 years, and every inch of them is constantly remodeled to be up to date, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I'm driving past one, and this entire side of the road backs to a lake, and it's this beautiful, again, very exclusive lake. God forbid you go to get out on this lake and you're not a resident of the town. I believe the police are allowed by law to shoot you. And anyway, this house that I'm passing has a flagpole. A lot of these houses have flagpoles. I don't know what it is about rich people and water, but it makes them want to fly flags. And from the flagpole is a Trump flag that is the size of one of those car dealership flags. You know, like it's not like the normal Trump. You see normal Trump flags. Like this thing is, it's 12 feet long if it's a foot. And so when I went home, because I'm a bad person, I hopped onto Zillow, and this house is worth about $3 million. And I just thought, what sort of person like buys the American Carnage thing when they're out on the back deck of their $3 million lake house watching the sunset? Right. I mean, this is, and it is weird how Trump is both the savior of the forgotten man. All of these poor, toothless, you know, high school educated white people in rural America who are poorly educated, who he loves, and also the avenging angel of a very particular type of richy rich. And I don't understand it, but I'm fascinated by it. And anyway,
well,
he's worried.
He's worried the immigrants are coming for his lake. I mean, any day now,
the
migrants
police would
coming
shoot
from
any
Guatemala.
Brown person in the city limits
camp?
Of this town.
What if they take up a camp? Are there any multifamily homes in or oh, God, small no. apartment complexes in the area no. that the migrants could take over?
No. They built
they
a very small
in the neighbor's
condo
home?
Community
what if
several
a migrant
years
squatted
back.
In the neighbor's
but those
home?
Condos start in the high 800s. Hmm. So...
You know,
they're low rise. They're
who knows?
They're
well, I mean, the unrealized capital gains tax might have an impact on like the size of the next flag that they're able to buy.
Maybe. So I don't know. Sarah, do you have thoughts about this psychology on this? Because here's the other thing. I am positive. Again, I'm going to judge somebody without having met them. but I am 100% positive that whoever chose to buy that house in this town, if their daughter came home from Vassar or Harvard or Princeton and was like, hey, this is
GW,
Cletus.
Let's just be honest.
He's a front row Joe from high school. And, you know, and he's working hard to get his HVAC certification. And then he's going to be a tech and daddy, I love him. I'm sure that whoever owns this house would fucking lose their mind. But, you know, there we are.
I think
that's
right. Here's the thing. I do think Trump's coalition takes both kinds of people in a less mocking way than you described them. I'm going to give you your Richie Rich ones. I'm not going to give you your toothless, unwashed masses one because I don't think that's fair. But I do think that I have much more sympathy for sort of the rural voters in, let's say, central Pennsylvania who
Tim
grew
Walls
up in
his family.
Yeah, but who grew up in coal towns, and Donald Trump promised, and they watched all their kids move away, and they watched the town that used to thrive and have an active church change and sort of crumble in front of their eyes. And they're in their 70s, and their kids don't come home that much because, you know, it's a wasteland, and all the good middle class jobs that were once there are gone, right? I think there's a lot of people who fit that bill in a lot of these towns in Pennsylvania and in Michigan and Wisconsin, Ohio, who saw their jobs shipped overseas, and they've got like reasons for their grievance. And then there's the boat parade people. and they've got their boats and they've got their matching RV, which they use to
and
travel
Ford
across
F-150
the country.
Ford F-150 Raptor Edition.
Yeah. And they take their patriotism and they, you know, they do a shrink wrap on their F-150 so that the whole thing is one big American flag. And then on the back, they do that thing where Joe Biden's hogtied, or maybe they got some fake bullets.
Chuck nuts. Yeah.
And I think that they would, if you ask like a good faith interpretation of the psychology, I do think there's a sense a lot of these people own their own business. They are frustrated by both some of the red tape when maybe they try to expand, or they're frustrated by maybe minimum wage laws, or they're frustrated by tax policy.
Black Little Mermaids. Frustrated by the Black Little Mermaid.
It's terrible.
Come
I
on.
Don't. I don't know.
Mermaids are white. Let's just be real. Mermaids
you know that
are
they
white.
Are so woke that Disney even put a black stormtrooper into one of the Star Wars movies. Tim,
Santa's white too.
Santa
so, and mermaids.
The Santa that was what Megyn Kelly. She yeah, got really bent out of shape.
Mermaids are white.
Someday we're gonna get a rant. One of our rants, and I'm gonna have a chat about Megyn Kelly. In any event,
got nothing but time.
maybe we'll do it after the election. Anyway, but those people, the people that you're talking about with their RVs and their boats, they are the ones, they can afford a great vacation. But they're the ones who are very certain that the world is trash, that the inner cities are just engulfed in flames and that everything's gone to hell. And I think that these are people who do want to be bought into a certain grievance. And the country's given them a lot. I'm sure they've worked hard. But the country has given them a lot, and I do find them more disheartening than people who I think fall for the con man's act around how he's going to bring the coal jobs back.
What J.D. Vance would have called the opioid, the political opioid. Yeah, I get that.
Mm. All right, good talk. Guys, you are going to go to Tejas together. Are you excited?
Why aren't you going?
I'm sorry. And it doesn't matter because you sold it out without me. So
I don't know if people know proves that you won't be there. I hate this. It's always like you get there and then people are like, wait, JVL is not here.
Okay. No, what people say is, what is a JVL? That is the actual thing people say.
One guy
wait,
said that.
JVL isn't
One
here
guy said that.
Is not a thing that anybody has ever said. Guys, have a good time in Texas. For everybody's at the Dallas live show, maybe I'll call while you guys are up on stage. Tim, if you take my call, you can put me on FaceTime and I'll wave to the audience or something.
Sounds great.
And we will see you guys next week after the debate. We're all going to white knuckle through this thing. And see you next week. Bye.
Bye.